You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7 Avalon.
How you doing? This is Ron Trupa with the Catalina Film Society and the Catalina Film Festival. I'm on the phone today with Mike Horlick, who is the director and writer of the film The Signal Hill Speedrun, which just came off of its world premiere screening at the Newport Beach Film Festival and will be this Saturday at the Avalon Community Church at 7 p.m. For the Catalina Film Society screening. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for letting us screen your film. I know that a lot of the Catalina Film Society members are already very excited about it because we're getting some RSVPs coming in. And it's just an interesting piece of Southern California history. And my first question to you is how you kind of stumbled upon this whole project.
Well, it was probably, about a good 10 years ago, John Carnoy and I, that's the co-director and co-filmmaker and an old friend of mine.
Sorry for not saying that.
Oh, that's fine. And we bought an old skateboard brand called Tunnel Skateboards. And that started in 1975 in Northern California, which is where we're from, by the way, both of us. And
from Northern California? What was the name of the company that you started?
Tunnel Skateboards.
Okay.
Like going through a tunnel. And I will say we didn't start it because it started in 75. We were little kids then, and we remembered it fondly. And actually, we both went off to film school. We're from Menlo Park. And I went to USC. John went off to first to NYU and then to FEMIS in France, which is the French film school. And then we sort of reunited to make films together. And one day we said, you know, this film thing is a lot of fun, a good challenge, and we should have a backup career. So we decided to add skateboarding to our backup as a backup career, not realizing that has some similar difficulties, but a lot of fun also, like filmmaking. So we both are labors of love. We'll leave it at that. And So we were working on this brand and the history of the brand, because it's an old brand from the 70s, as I said. And one of the photographers that we met said, oh, look at these pictures, and showed us pictures from the Signal Hill Speedrun, which was the world's first downhill skateboard race. And
So you live in Orange County now, right?
I live in Santa Monica now.
Okay, so you're in Santa Monica.
Right,
okay.
And Dawn is in Paris, and so we've had this has been a good challenge making this film between two continents, and, you know, he travels back here, and it's been sort of a long haul on it. But, so I live now in Santa Monica and run the skateboard brand, and then I have a friend who works at the LA Times, and he said, our sports department on occasion looks for articles from freelance writers. And I said, well, I wrote about five different ideas, and one of them was the Signal Hill Speedrun, because I remembered both as a kid looking in the magazine, but more recently, you know, seeing the photos and footage from these photographers and, you know, of this crazy hill with these super steep and big wipeouts at the bottom. And I pitched that story, and the LA Times said, that's the story we want. We would love you to write that as an article. And that
And when was that? About
that
what time period?
It was 2007.
Oh, that was in 2007.
Yeah. And so I wrote the article, and I called around to a lot of – and I had met a couple of the old racers, but I met obviously a lot more when I called around about the article. And, you know, I said to myself, I'm going to ask additional questions much above and beyond the article, because I think it's such interesting subject matter. And I saved everyone's contact information and, you know, collected more photos and stories from back in the day, and thought, this is really deserving – of at least a short documentary film. And so I wrote the article, but then I contacted my old friend John and said, John, we should, you know, we'd never done a documentary. Now, John's done some reality TV, and I have too. John directed The Real World, the MTV show, which was, it took part in.
Which series, you know, was it when it first started?
It was the Paris series, because he was living in Paris, France, and they wanted an American who could direct and speak French. So I would love to give you the exact year. I don't remember. It's got to be probably 8-10 years ago.
Okay.
I had worked a little bit on reality TV, working on a show called Best of the Worst, which was Sincere Film Person, which was one of Greg Kinnear's first shows while he was the host. And it was produced by the Wolpers, who also did the original Charlie, well, I guess it was called Willy Wonka, or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And they did Roots, Thornbirds. And so I worked on that show. And so we both had a little bit of knowledge of that world, but at the same time, we'd never done a documentary. And we said, let's do a short documentary. That was our plan. And so we're going to do it on the Signal Hill speed run. And then we started interviewing people and thought, wow, this is a lot of information, a lot of great stories. And we called the city of Signal Hill, actually just looking for old photos of the city. And they called us in there, and they'd seen the article and said, we want to help support this project. So they gave us a grant, which is really wonderful. And then I said to John, you know, John, and we've done so much work already, why don't we just do this as a feature film? How long could that possibly take?
So, yeah, and you're laughing, that's the famous filmmaker words, isn't it?
And that was, famous last words. I think we said we might try to do this in one summer, maybe two summers, because that's when John was coming over from France. And we're talking now, that was 2008, when we were really kind of starting, 2008, 2009. So it's been a good 4 or 5 years on this project.
Well, let me plead as the ignorant person here. Is Signal Hill an actual city? Because I didn't know that.
Yeah, now Signal Hill, which is interesting and is, in the film, in the middle of Long Beach is a city called the City of Signal Hill. But it's actually not Long Beach.
But an actual city with, like, police officers and fire department?
Somewhat. Now, what happened was in the early 20s, they discovered oil under that hill because it sticks up sort of in the middle of Long Beach. It's a pretty steep hill. And in the middle of the night, they decided, well, if we go tell the city of Long Beach we just found oil, we're going to be sending all of our oil revenue over to Long Beach. So they gathered in the middle of the night, and they incorporated a city. The city of Signal Hill in the middle of Long Beach, and they have their own city. Now, you asked if it has its own fire department, own police department. I think some of those services it has its own, such as police department. Some of the larger things they actually will contract out to Long Beach because they're right in the middle of Long Beach and, pay a fee to Long Beach. So they have, I think they may share some of the same fire departments, but not police department. So to answer your question, I don't know all the things that are separate and all the things that are not.
That's actually a pretty fascinating start to Signal Hill.
Definitely. And, even going back even further, the name Signal Hill, and we met historians from the city and said, why is it called Signal Hill? And even that's up to debate. Some think it's because they were able to, the Indian or natives, were able to make signal fires from the top of that hill that could be seen all the way out pretty much to Catalina Island.
Wow.
Which can be seen from the top of Signal Hill.
That's amazing.
And not only that, so then came the oil boom, which was the early 20s, 1921, I think, was the official start of that. And that hill had still been a gathering spot, and then the next thing that happened is they decided to race Model T cars up the hill. This was before the skateboard race. And I guess it's such a steep hill, and they have special carburetors. I guess they're not fuel-injected, the old Model T, so they could literally run out of gas due to gravity as they went up this hill. So they would drive as fast as they could and try to make it up to the top. Sometimes they could only make it halfway before it was just too steep.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on KISO 88.7 Avalon.
How steep is the hill? Do you know? Is there like a certain grade?
I think
is there a certain
almost
height from base to top, like you would do a mountain?
Yeah, I think it's an almost 30-degree grade, and which is really steep. And, in fact, I think with modern road making, that would be too steep for legal reasons. I think the state of California has certain rules on that. And they've actually, and a lot of the racers wanted to point out to us, and every time we talked to them, they said they've degraded the hill. So if you go to Signal Hill now, it's not quite as steep. And it might have been because it was so steep and, it was difficult for trucks to reach the top. So it's a little bit smoothed out. They obviously put better asphalt, and there's also a center divider in there, as well as a stop sign at the bottom and a no skateboarding sign. So that's not something they want to encourage now.
No skateboarding sign. That's funny.
Skateboard down the hill, because it's a tempting hill if you like going down on a skateboard.
Is it a major sort of street for people to get through from town to town? I mean, why would trucks have to go up it? Why wouldn't they just go around it or take a different route?
Well, to answer your question, I've been there obviously several times, and we filmed some of the interviews there. And
yeah.
It's at the top of the hill now is a park, and there's still oil pump jacks is the exact word. Pump jacks around that hill, so which is one of the strangest things you'll see anywhere in the world, pump jacks in someone's backyard. I wouldn't call it a major thoroughfare, but at the same time, a lot of people come there to exercise. You'll see a lot of walkers walking up the hill and back down the hill for exercise, almost like stairs are in many cities. And then you have the nice view at the top. And the city has even mentioned that one day they would love to have a screening of the film at the top of the hill.
That'd be great.
And they said, the only thing is we don't want kids skateboarding down the hill. And I said, well, that's going to be tough. If you show the film at the top and kids are on their skateboards, they might be tempted.
Right.
Seeing the film.
You'd have to have the police at the bottom of the hill ready to give out fines.
Yeah, to catch people like they used to in the old days. They'd try to
catch me if you can. Start seeing them running down real fast. The cops can't even catch them. That would be hilarious.
It's still, to answer your question, it's steep hill. It's probably not as steep as it was, but it's still impressive to imagine someone going down there in a skateboard without brakes.
That's insane. I mean, I just remember my soapbox little car that we tried to build when we were kids with, leftover parts, and just going down a mild incline on a road was pretty rough. I couldn't even imagine going down something.
Yeah, you wouldn't commit to that. There's no backing out, and that's why, people have asked me, would you skateboard down Signal Hill? Because I was a skateboarder as a kid, and I said, if I were willing to skateboard down that hill, I wouldn't make a movie about it. I mean, this is something that you needed to have a lot of courage, and, there were men doing it, and by the end of the race, there were also women doing it, which is, hats off to anyone who could make it down that hill, or even attempt it.
Yeah, and that's fascinating because, you think of when skateboarding just started, and honestly, I don't want to give away too much of the film. I want people to kind of come and see for themselves, but usually sports, when they are created, are male-dominated, and then you do always have the women that want to be the pioneers in that sport, and Signal Hill was no different.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, as I said, a credit, first of all, to anybody, man or woman. And the women had to deal with men saying, this is a sport for men, this is not really for women. And they did it anyway, and they, trained and were able to get down that hill just like men were. And it's a credit to them.
Yeah. And so would you say, and you knew nothing about Signal Hill before someone started showing you these pictures?
I had, as a kid, John and I were both skateboarders, and but we weren't riding down hills like Signal Hill. We were riding around the neighborhood. We were younger kids at the time, and we looked up to all these skateboarders that were in the magazine. So we remember reading about it, but you know how things sort of get forgotten over the years. And so when I saw the actual footage, which I had never seen before, because I saw Super 8 footage of the race, that's when when it really caught my attention. So I would say that it was reintroduced, but I took the real interest, which was not that long ago. That's when I was reintroduced to these photos at this gentleman from San Pedro by the name of Bobby Smith, who had this incredible collection of skateboard photos of all types and also footage. And some of that was from Signal Hill, and some of that made it into the film. So that was sort of the impetus was, seeing these photos and going first to the LA Times and then now this film, and, it's sort of the interest in this event, I think, is growing. And it was a decent-sized event back in the day, too, which is always, John and I are always impressed that people come out of the woodwork. I was there. We had one of the boys who was hit in the audience, or the crowd, I should say, and he came and introduced himself at one of the screenings. So it's been a great way for the racers to get back in contact with each other and to get their due for taking part in the sport that was truly in its infancy.
Yeah. Now, would you say the Sigma Hill changed the face of skateboarding?
I would say yes. It definitely changed downhill skateboarding, and a lot of the techniques that were developed then are still being used today. And I would say in the last, 10 years, downhill skateboarding has really grown a lot. And but yet most of the techniques that these kids use, and I call them kids, some of them, they're starting now at, 14, 15, doing the downhill.
Yeah.
Probably even younger, 12, 13. And a lot of them don't know the history. Some do. They know of this legendary Signal Hill race. But some of the original racers are still around competing or training these younger kids. And I think this film really opens their eyes to see that they didn't invent this sport, even if they think they did. It was really done years and years ago by the men and women who raced at Signal Hill and the other races of the day.
Well, I know it definitely inspired Catalina and the Catalina Classic on a lot of the hills that they had in 1977 that you used to be able to see on the CBS broadcast, but I'm looking right now on the computer, it's been taken down. But a lot of the similar players that were in Signal Hill, I guess, also went to Catalina. And you had a bit of it in your movie, but I think a chunk of it got cut out. Is that right?
Yeah, it got trimmed back. Now, the Signal Hill race would be the first downhill race that most skate historians agree on. And it was run by Jim O'Mahony, who was a hang glider and sort of a larger-than-life figure. Now, after that race, which was almost a dare, some people don't like the word daredevil because it still had a lot of technique and skill to it, but it was really just a straight drop at Signal Hill. Now, more and more people after racing at Signal Hill said, we want to, increase the technique used and spread this sport around the world. It was really a California-based sport. But they actually had races in Derby Downs, which is in Ohio, on a soapbox derby track. So that was another O'Mahony event. That started in 77. There was a series of rock concerts called Cal Jam, and somehow Jim O'Mahony got involved in that. So you had crowds of, I think it was about 250,000 people watching skateboard, and in that case it would be on ramps before these Cal Jam concerts. And then Santa Cruz Skateboards put on the Catalina Classic that you were talking about in 1977. And that was a famous race. For one, it was in a beautiful location. It was spread out over a weekend. They had not just downhill skateboarding, but they had freestyle, and they had a slalom course, and it was televised. And I think that would be, as you pointed out, I think it was televised on CBS. And the one in Ohio was also televised, and for some reason the one at Signal Hill was covered by the media, and in fact the last year Sports Illustrated turned up, and it was this huge event, but the Catalina Classic was definitely a great event, very technical with a lot of turns and required more skill, but it was still the same, almost the exact same racers, because it was really a core group of people that had the skills necessary to win these races. So you had...
I think the only downhill part that they had was on Metropole Avenue, but it had to have been like half the steepness of Signal Hill. I don't think it was anywhere near as steep as Signal Hill.
I think it would be considered a more difficult race, but less dangerous, but more difficult, because you had a lot of turns. And I've seen the footage, I think at Signal Hill was sort of, throw yourself over the side of this almost cliff-like thing and hope you make it to the bottom. But Catalina, you really definitely needed the skills of being able to taking corners. You had Tony Alva competing at Catalina, which was probably the biggest name in skateboarding of the day. You had all the famous slalom skateboarders, Henry Hester. And I don't want to give it away, but the same winner at Catalina definitely won one of the Signal Hill races, too, which shows that it wasn't a fluke in either direction.
Yeah, it's just definitely the the right person that had the quickest speed.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7.
I remember there were even some guys that had their own wheels, and they based the speed of the skateboard on different types of wheels that they would use.
Yeah, well, all of them would have different ideas of what they could do technique-wise to win these races. So,
yeah.
You know, they had sort of
but it didn't always work out.
Not always.
They can try.
Yeah. Some things work better than others, put it that way. But people would, you know, custom make equipment, or they would somehow just – sometimes they would just take a skateboard from a store and use it. I mean, it was sort of a free-for-all. And I would say that Jim O'Mahony, the promoter, was a free-for-all type guy. I mean, safety definitely didn't come first. But there were definitely safety things put into place. But you figure it's a new sport, and no one knew what was going to happen. I mean, the first race, they were saying they weren't even sure someone could make it from the top to the bottom. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a big mystery to everybody. So how do you plan for safety on an event you're not even sure what's going to happen? That's one of the challenges.
Did you have a great reception at Newport Beach when you went there? How was that? What did people say?
That was a great event. I don't know if you saw, we did receive an award there for outstanding achievement for action sports films. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we won an award, and but I think that for most importantly for us was that we are able to have skateboarders from the race come and answer questions. And for these people, a lot of them that day, as in the days of the race, were the highlights in many ways, maybe not compared to having children or getting married or those types of things, but definitely among the highlights of their life. And I think that the showing of this film allows younger people and people that were not there to see sort of what they achieved, and they get to relive this day. And there were some people that maybe didn't want to relive the day in the same way because it didn't turn out too well. But in general, I think the true joy for this film is to allow the original people to share their experience both through the film and even just to talk to people. And that's been one of the biggest rewards. And having the original people put their stamp of approval, the original racers, men and women, that, that a group of us have made this film. I know I just mentioned John, but there's been a lot of people that obviously, like any film, worked a lot of hours.
Sure, a lot of contributions.
A lot of contributions,
And then your editor, and your editor's been doing a lot, and we haven't even talked about your narrator, Ben Harper.
Yeah, oh sure. Well, we'll start with the narrator. Would be Ben Harper, the musician / skateboarder, because he's also a two-time skateboarder. And
how did you get Ben?
Well, I'm still running the Tunnel skateboard brand, and I run it out of near a small shop in Santa Monica called Rip City. And anyone who knows skateboarding may know that shop because it's pretty historic. It's been there since the 70s, since the race. And,
you got to give us an address.
2709 Santa Monica Boulevard.
Okay.
And it started in 1978. The same owners are still in there. And if you want to go to one of the last true skate shops in probably the world, that would be among them.
That's
so
awesome.
You can go in there, and I bring in people that are not skateboarders, don't know anything about it, and they all walk out happy because you have all sorts of boards on the wall. There's a lot of history right there. It's a small little wall type place, but with a lot of history, as authentic as it comes. And
that's
I would
awesome.
Say just,
so
it's a great
the
place.
Hard Rock Cafe of skateboards.
Oh, yeah. Just don't ask for rollerblades. They don't take kindly to that. It's a skateboard shop.
You're in Santa Monica. I bet you get a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, people walk in, and they don't always get treated well, but otherwise they do. They're very nice there, whether you're a beginner, advanced. They have people coming in from all around the world to see this shop. And on any given day, you would run into every type of member of society, and they all mix really well in there. It's just a really nice atmosphere.
That's awesome. So did Ben Harper come into the shop?
So Ben Harper came into the shop, and he lives here in Santa Monica, and he, skateboards a lot. In fact, the funny thing, he brought it up because we saw him this afternoon. There's a skateboard park in Santa Monica, and my editor, Brian Dolly, that's done a lot of the editing work in this film, we walked across the street to take a break, and there he was, Ben Harper, skating. Mm-hmm. with a lot of little kids and keeping up with them, and he's a great skateboarder. And
That's
so
awesome.
He's come in the shop. We showed him some clips, and he looked at it, and he said, I remember this from when I was a kid, and I want to do this. You tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. And no questions asked other than that. And he's just been an incredible support for the film. He's the funny thing was is, you know, we told him it's a lot of work, and I think he knew that. But once he started doing the narration, he said, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But he said, but I'm not complaining. I love it. And so we've gone through probably three rounds of, you know, we're adjusting his narration because we're constantly working on the film. And in fact, one of the racers came
up.
Well,
you know, he obviously has a great singing voice, but he really does have a great narrating voice as well.
Yeah, he's, I think, whoa. Well, some of my fans just came in. It looks like they got new light-up balls down in Santa Monica at the promenade. Good job,
that's
Valeria.
Great.
Bye. He has a great voice, and you know, we showed the film to a lot of people, and I think he gets a lot of compliments when people say, I love your narrator, Ben Harper. Now, should I know who he is? So obviously they don't know him from the music world. Sometimes they're, you know, elderly, and they love his voice, which leads me to believe we chose the right person because he's got a great narration voice no matter what.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's he was a great find, and that obviously his passion shows through just in his narration.
Yeah, he's definitely dedicated, and, you know, there was a skateboard event recently, and I wouldn't say it was anyone's fault, but someone said, oh, you got my name slightly wrong, the pronunciation, so we're going to redo it, and he's always up to perfect it. But I think his caring for the project really comes through in when you watch the film, because you can tell here's someone who was a really dedicated person. It wasn't one pass, take it or leave it type attitude. It was, let's do this until we get it perfect.
You can tell. You definitely can tell. It's, you know, people think it's easy to narrate, and they think it's easy to do voiceovers, but it's a skill. And I was impressed. I didn't know he had that skill in his arsenal.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You had something else to say.
No, I was just going to say that when I think he's, you know, I've listened to his music, and he's a great storyteller in the music and his inflection, and I think that when he was reading the narration, as you just said, it's a true skill. It's not you just say the words and it will sound fine. I mean, he asked questions about the story. We watched it together. He wanted to make sure he really understood everything that was going on within that race so he could do the best job with his narration. I think it really shows through.
Did you have a hard time finding some of the old skateboarders that were in your footage? How did you track them down?
Yeah, we did have a difficult time. I mean, the 5 years should let you know that everything was difficult at times, which isn't to say that a lot of people were very helpful. But, I mean, obviously the Facebook and the Internet helps. Now, we had lists of people who competed. Some, you know, back in those days, things like spelling weren't really that important to people, I think. So we would sometimes have three different ways to spell the same person's name, and how do we find that person? So we would, you know, look them up on all the different search engines, and I think we found a good 70 to 75% of the racers. And so I think that's really good, and we still are, you know, have a few left that we're still looking for, and hopefully we find them, and maybe we will, maybe we won't. It was definitely in finding footage, finding photos. So everyone we would talk to that would race, we'd say, you know, do you happen to have any photos or footage? Did you have a relative who was there? And a lot of them did, because I guess it was a pretty big event, so we were able to find stuff that way. And we've had probably more good luck than bad luck. Sometimes
that's
people
good.
Would say,
that's when you know you're on a good track.
Sometimes they would say, you should have called me 3 years ago because I threw it out. And that did happen, and it was very painful for us to hear. And but most people were really happy that they saved it. We would convert it to a digital format. A lot of the times it was Super 8 film. And so we would convert it for them at a high quality and then give it back to them. So we weren't really taking it from them. If anything, we were making it more archival for them too.
That's awesome. And it gives them something, you know, it's almost like a scrapbook or a yearbook in your high school. You know, it kind of gives them a memento that they probably haven't had in years, especially if everything's on Super 8.
Oh, yeah. The majority of people would want, you know, it said put in as much as you can of this footage or photos because they want to see it. Often they were in it. And not that people were self-centered. Most people really were. Understand it's, you know, we're telling the story of the race and we do the best we can to involve the racers. And I think I mentioned to you that I think people were pleased. We didn't have an agenda to only highlight certain people. In fact, we heard some people, oh, they came in last place. Well, you know how characters can be. That could be an interesting character. They could have had a fun reason to want to enter. And so we didn't set out with the goal of saying we're only going to highlight winners and we're not going to even mention people who didn't win because sometimes the most interesting people didn't win, but they entered.
Sure, and they had interesting stories. And
yeah.
you don't have to mention who is who, but I thought some of the injuries were
You're
horrific.
Listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon.
But horrific and fascinating. Do you want to give just sort of like a little overview of the types of injuries that came from this insanely huge incline called Signal
Sure.
Hill?
Well, I will say this. I don't think this will give away too much, but in the very beginning, you would have people standing on skateboards most of the time. They really didn't have rules in the very beginning whether you wanted to stand up or sit on, kneel on your knees or lay on your back. It was kind of an anything goes. But in general, you know, people coming down the hill, if they panicked, could jump off their skateboard. Now, they might break an ankle, break a wrist. Their board could fly into the crowd because they didn't have any fencing in the beginning and could hurt people in the crowd. But at the same time, you were required to wear leathers, you know, like a motorcycle-type leathers and a helmet. And so you're asking about types of injuries, and they were, I wouldn't say horrific. I would say, you know, of the broken bone variety in the beginning. Easy for me to say broken bones isn't bad, but I guess relatively.
Right, I know.
Now, once they invented the enclosed skateboards, which are called skate cars, they look safer because you're enclosed in a small pod, I would say, almost like a gravity-type car. But what I didn't realize until the racers told me was actually they were much worse because if you're going down the hill and you suddenly panic and decide you want to abort, you can't jump off of that. You're fastened in from the outside, literally with a twist.
Right.
And there's no backing out. And those were actually the most horrific injuries because if those went into the crowd or into a curb or into a pole, now you're talking more serious injuries where people are unconscious or,
You're talking about speeds like 40, 50, 60 miles per hour.
Yeah, they got up to 60 miles an hour. By the end, and that's pretty fast. I mean, that's as fast as a car on the freeway. So if you
that's what I was gonna say. That's an impact, but you don't have a car company designing this, you know, highly engineered safety standard cushioned, seatbelt. You got pretty much rudimentary, welded type of metalwork surrounded by basically in a tin can. With
Some
human
of them
flesh.
Were made out of, yeah, most of them were actually not even metal. They were fiberglass. So you can imagine fiberglass really provides no protection whatsoever. Because at that speed of 60 miles an hour, imagine a thin – and they were weight limits, so you couldn't build something super heavy like a tank. It had to be relatively light. So exactly what you said, they weren't designed with airbags, which I don't even know if those were really around yet. They definitely didn't have seatbelts.
I don't think so.
And the brakes were substandard. That would be a compliment to call them substandard. Some of them were pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Or literally didn't work at all. So you can imagine at 60 miles an hour going without brakes. Because at the bottom there's a little bit of a runoff. And after that there's just buildings, there's cross traffic. So you're still going in 15 seconds. You're going a quarter mile. And you're not able to jump off of that. So you can imagine how dangerous it was.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to give away the film, but some of the breaks that I saw, I was just like, they trusted their lives with this thing.
Yeah, I think going over the
height. It was pretty nuts. I mean, you might as well use a three-wheeler big wheel with the plastic brake.
Yeah. Well, as I said, if I would do it, I wouldn't have made a movie about it. So these people that did it, I think, everyone who went over the side, I mean, it was a definite risk. And, you know, I think nowadays it's still a risk, even with the kids doing the downhill skateboarding, but they've definitely perfected braking and sliding much more than the competitors at Signal Hill, even though that's where it came out of, this sliding. But nowadays they're definitely more talented at it, so they have a little bit more control.
Yeah. You know, and I'm from Providence, Rhode Island, where they started the X Games, and I remember when they used to come down College Hill and the east side where Brown University is, and there's some really big hills and huge inclines around there near the Rhode Island School of Design and everything. And I haven't seen Signal Hill, but I would assume it's somewhere in that area. And they used to come down burning so fast with those street luge, like, you know, pieces of equipment, that I'm sure some of that probably was designed and originated with some of the designs from Signal Hill. Because
well,
this was probably in the late 90s.
Yeah, the street luge was pretty popular in the X Games. And street luge was invented at Signal Hill. And, you know, as I said,
yeah,
you can pretty much mention any type of downhill skateboarding, whether style or technique, and it pretty much started there. And at the end of the film, we do wrap it up with all the different creative people. They invented street luge. They invented basically downhill skateboarding there because that was the first race. They invented the skate cars. They invented you know, things that I see in the skateboard business today, they put sliders on their hands. Sliders are hard pieces of urethane or plastic. So when you take a sharp turn, you put your hands out to protect yourself against the ground.
Smart.
And this was invented at Signal Hill. They also realized that if you're going really fast down a hill and you want to slow down, you can stand up and put your arms out. This is called air braking, and that was invented there. And even the way that they put themselves into a tuck, like if you can imagine a downhill skier, well, this was invented also at Signal Hill. So, and they still use that to this day, that same tuck. So I think, as I said, for anyone who has an interest in downhill skateboarding or even just an interest in sports or competition, I think it's a film to see. And people even asked me, well, if I'm not a skateboarder, would I still want to see this film? And I say, well, if you've ever climbed Mount Everest, if you've never climbed Mount Everest, would you not want to watch a film about it? I mean, I do. I don't have a desire to climb Mount Everest, but I know that the challenge of that mountain is pretty big, and I want to see, you know, it's a exciting thing.
Well, I have to be honest. If you ever look at humanity and how they all stop to see a car crash on a highway, like on a daily basis, That's the type of film this is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you like a good crash,
everyone wants to stop and watch.
I say you still might enjoy seeing people taking some pretty big risks and definitely some crashes. It's, you know, I know that, you know, the Red Bull has some similar events now where they almost all end in crashes. But this was, these were not crashes for the sake of crashes. I mean, they were trying to break a record. And if you broke the record, you entered the Guinness Book of World Records as being the fastest skateboarder.
Right.
And so it was, in fact, that's how the whole race started. It was a television
Guinness
show.
Guinness Book of World Records,
Guinness Book of World Records with David Frost, who, if you saw Frost Nixon, was the British journalist. I guess you'd call him
the
interviewer who interviewed Nixon. Anyway, he was the head of this television show, or the host, the Guinness Book of World Records, and skateboarding was getting to be big in the 70s, and they called up Jim O'Mahony, and they said, we know you're running a skateboard organization. Can you organize a skateboard race? And that's how the whole thing started. But in all honesty, only two people turned up the first year. It was not the world's biggest race. So,
well, to be honest, that's kind of what made Frost Nixon such a powerful piece, because they didn't see David Frost as a threat, because he was kind of doing these types of pieces, and all of a sudden he got Richard Nixon to say a little too much, and it created his whole career.
So from Richard Nixon to the Signal Hill speed run, you have a little of everything in there.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and I don't mean to demean, you know, the product and say that it's all about watching the car crash, but it's not. But what I'm saying is that people like to watch people that are on the line of danger. So they like to see the victories as well because they're anticipating the crash.
Well, I mean, what you said.
So if you succeed, then they're even more overjoyed when you're watching the film.
Well, I mean, we have, you know, maybe some of your listeners saw the Dogtown and Z-Boys documentary, which also was about skateboarding in the 70s, a great film by Stacy Peralta. And so we interviewed Skip Engblom, who was one of the founders of that Zephyr surf shop in Santa Monica that spawned that film. Now, he also came to watch the Signal Hill speedrun in 1977, and he described it as the crowd was like the crowd of the French Revolution. They wanted to see blood.
Hmm.
So I think what you were saying was probably not far from the truth. People wanted to see it was a spectacle, and people that went to the race, and I didn't because I was a kid living north at the time, and John, too, said, I mean, you never knew what was going to happen next at this race. I mean, it was a bit of a free-for-all. You had, you know, a drunk guy would go down on a big wheel, not part of the competition. You might see someone on luge. You might see someone crash through the crowd. Who knew what you were going to see next? And I think that was a bit of the appeal. It was a bit of a Wild West attitude.
Right.
In a sport.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. You wouldn't have the crowds. It wouldn't be a spectacle if there wasn't some sort of danger element to it, because basically people either wanted to see, well, you know, they wanted to see someone that was a heroic victory, or they wanted to see someone that fell pretty hard. I mean, it's, you know, it's why people go to hockey games, right?
Yeah, they want to see excitement, whatever the word excitement means, but I think also the crowd, you know, in those days it was sort of the opposite of going to a baseball game or a football game with the order of everything that happens. I mean, here you, and I don't want to give away too much, but you have guys coming down the hill literally on acid and doing fairly well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was really sort of a free-for-all and a different mentality. And I think that's what set – it was sort of the, you know, the birth of modern skateboarding and why even today it's considered somewhat of a rebel sport compared to the more traditional sports of, you know, basketball and football. Here you have a bit of a free-for-all. The rules are loose and this was the place to come prove yourself, you know, completely against a clock where you could, you know, unlike the pool skating or the freestyle, that those were all judged. This was really just who can make it down the fastest. And, you know, that's, I think, that the purity of the sport is what gave it some of its appeal, too.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And what do you have planned for the rest of this film? I mean, you've only shown at Newport Beach Film Festival right now. I mean, where do you want
to
take it?
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon. Where do you want to go with it? What's the end goal? Did you always have the end goal in sight?
Well, we we have a couple festivals lined up in the future. One is actually, Madrid, they have a skateboard film festival. Madrid, Spain, I should be more clear.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
They heard about the film. And then also we in Hawaii, they do a surf film festival. And I know we didn't talk a lot about it, but our film really is about skateboarding, but it also involves a lot of the other sports of the 70s that influenced this race. You had hang gliding. You had big wave surfing. Out of this, by the way, came snowboarding, the world's first snowboard race, which would be 1981. And there were some of the same competitors from the Signal Hill Speedrun entered that. So,
really?
Yeah, we definitely, and we have ski jumping in there, and we have luge, which was similar to the skate cars because they had pushers at the top of the hill, and people would even go down and get, you know, NCAA track athletes to become their pushers. So they took it pretty seriously. Everything was done to get an edge, to just beat everyone else by, you know, a few millimeters. And so we're showing it at the Hawaii Surf Film Festival in Oahu. And, you know, down the line, we are working on different ways to distribute the film and get it out to a bigger crowd and hopefully to have people appreciate these heroes and you know, men and women that race down Signal Hill.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, eventually, are you looking for some sort of theatrical release, or do you want to go straight to video, or are you just keeping all your options open?
Well, we're keeping our options open. I mean, John and I have discussed it, and as well as you know all the other people that have worked on the film, and we think it's these people's story, and this is taking ourselves out of it for a second, but this is just such a great story, and we have so many ingredients in it that we can take zero credit for, you know, the innovation of these people to invent new vehicles just to enter this race, or the risks they took, or the different ways they competed in this race, and the twists and turns that occurred in the race. And we thought, you couldn't write something out of your head that's this creative, so we think it's, you know, worthy of something theatrical and also to reach a large audience. So we're pretty excited.
Yeah, and you know, when I saw it, I definitely saw the historical reverence of it. You know, I mean, it definitely felt like looking at a piece of history. It looked like, you know, you can see the turning point for a whole culture of, you know, you call it adventure sport seekers.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looked like what extreme sports have become, and it looked like the origin of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and it was, you know, one of the first, we've pointed this as one of the first X game type events, because it was somewhat organized, yet also a free-for-all, as we discussed. I mean, safety was not as big of an issue as it is now, or lawsuits. I mean, many people, after they watched the film, said, loved it. There's no way that this could ever happen today in the same way. But I think people still take a lot of risks. And, you know,
that's how you know it was a pioneering effort as well, because none of those safety clauses were kind of involved at the time. It was just kind of a try and see what happens sort of thing. And that's when you know you're dealing with something that was a brand new pioneered way of approaching a skateboard with gravity.
Yeah. I mean, what's really exciting about it is, I mean, there's so many, as I said, mentioned the twists and turns. I mean, you had a race and I maybe didn't mention this, but it was in Signal Hill, but ironically the runoff area was in Long Beach, because that was the other city. It was right next to it. Now, Long Beach didn't even know that there was a race going on. So the city of Signal Hill, they had permits and everything. But when people crashed in a city and they were heading off to the hospital, because the last year, I will say, I think there were 12 competitors and 11 spectators in the hospital from one race. So that would be 23 people total. The city of Long Beach didn't even know about it. And you can imagine that there were a couple lawsuits after that, and that's kind of was the demise of the event, which I think doesn't totally give it away. But, I mean, there's so many twists, interesting twists and turns. And I think when John and I set up to make this film, I mean, ultimately we said this is a human story and the great characters, and skateboarding is important, but it's really a film that I think a lot of people would enjoy just because of the sort of the nature of the human spirit in the film.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say it was like the gladiators of Rome. You know, there were a lot of common people that went in there and they challenged themselves, and the onlookers and the spectators stood on the side and watched, see if they were triumphant or see if they fell flat on their face. And, you know, this is like the modern day version of where extreme sports have kind of taken the old Roman gladiators, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think today the things people do are so over the top. I mean, you have people in squirrel suits. Those are the base jumpers who will jump off a cliff. And I mean, it's pretty amazing what people do today. And I think that this is the equivalent just back in the day when things hadn't really even almost been tested yet.
Yeah. I love watching how the crowds grew, you know, throughout the years in the footage. And that's kind of where I was like, oh, okay, people are talking about it. You got something. Yeah, something of significance when all these people are showing up.
Well, you know, the last year, Sports Illustrated was there, Sunset Magazine was there, and I tell you, that's a pretty wide range of press to be covering an event, a downhill skateboard event. So I don't think Sports Illustrated is covering a lot of skateboard events anymore, but I think that was sort of a sign of how big this sport had grown. And at the same time, skateboarding took a downward turn after that, and a lot of it really wasn't about the race, but about lawsuits with skate parks and, you know, things like that happened, but it definitely made a comeback after that. And right now, the downhill skateboarding is one of the growing fields and internationally. So it used to be just a California type thing, and now they're really racing all throughout Europe and Australia and South America, Brazil.
Yeah, and I think I don't think anyone back then was signing away their life, you know, clauses, and they won't sue anyone if, you know, and I think eventually that evolved with airplane, you know, jumping and, you know, where you basically, the common person could go there and say, yes, I waive all my rights to sue anyone if it results in death or injury. And,
yeah,
you know, I think that became kind of the, how all these sports kind of came back and entered the mainstream media again, including like UFC and stuff like that. It's like, you know, you're leaving your foot, you're leaving your rights at the door, and you're entering the ring or you're entering the stage.
I guess what made the speed run a little different was not only were the competitors taking a risk, but the spectators were taking a big risk, you know?
Yeah.
These days, spectators, I think, are kept fairly safe, but
reminded me of NASCAR. I mean, and you see those crashes, and you see, like, you know, tires going off into the crowd.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of that.
Well, the when I talked to the founder of the race, his wife, and I said, oh, how come I don't see you in any of the footage? He said, well, I had to stay home with the kids, and I wouldn't allow them to go watch the race. That's how dangerous it was. I didn't even want them watching. So definitely it was something that was even then they probably knew there was a risk involved just being involved, but being there watching, standing on the sidelines.
Would you say like 50% of them didn't even make it halfway down the hill? It seemed like there were a lot of wipeouts 50% down. Like they really just couldn't take it, and they didn't know what they were in for.
I don't, you know, in terms of exact percentage, I'd probably say a little less than that. But the main thing I get when I talk to the competitors today is that the ones who trained the most and, you know, really practiced generally had a better chance of making it down. But they really didn't have a lot of rules about entering. They claimed that they did. You know, you paid an entry fee. You had to sign a form. I think you had to be 18, although we met a couple that I think were 17 at the time. But the ones that didn't practice or, you know, they would make a skate car and turn up the night before, those generally had a lower chance of making it down, whereas the ones who practiced, raced, as you said, Catalina, Ohio, Signal Hill, the experienced racers usually had the best chance of making it down.
Yeah. Well, if anybody wants to come see what we're talking about, you can come see at the Avalon Community Church this Saturday, June 8th at 7 p.m., and you can come see the Signal Hill downhill speed run in the flesh and in the person, because it's definitely a spectacle, even if it's on the screen.
I was going to point out,
but,
too,
you guys did a great job.
Oh, thank you. And if people want to read a little bit more about it, we do have a Facebook page where we put up all sorts of announcements and old photos and old articles of coverage of the race, and that's sort of a nice place to come, and a lot of the old racers are there to answer questions too, even on the Facebook page.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's great.
Perfect.
And did you have a website set up for the actual film?
Right now it's just the Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook.
Okay, so just the Facebook.
The Signal Hill Speed Run is the title. And
okay.
There is,
and just search that, and you'll probably pop right. I think I've actually liked it already.
Oh, great! And I think that you may have posted in your place the trailer, so that's where people could watch the trailer, obviously.
Yeah, if you go to catalinafilm.org and you click on Film Society, or you go click to catalinafs, like filmsociety.org, you can see the trailer, you can see the synopsis, you can click on Mike and go to his IMDb page and read all about it.
Great.
And then,
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, that's great.
See? It's interactive radio.
And thank
Well, Mike, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. We're excited to have it. The RSVPs are coming in. I think this is something that's resonating with Catalina locals, especially with the Catalina Classic and just, you know, extreme sport fans in general. Everybody kind of is drawn to these type of films, and it's a well-made piece, so we're excited to have it.
Well, thank you so much, and we're having a great time sharing it, and we appreciate you showing it out there. K Can't wait.
Thank you. And that's this Saturday, June 8th, at the Avalon Community Church at 7 p.m. You can come see the Signal Hill Speed Run.
Great.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you. I really appreciate it. See, and the kids were pretty good when they came in. They only threw a couple of balls at you and then left.
Yeah, I heard a couple knocks on the door. I saw some new glowing balls they got down at the promenade, but in general, I can't complain.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on KISO 88.7 Avalon.